This is The Takeaway. I'm Sarah Gonzalez.
And I'm Todd Zwillick. Tomorrow is breakup day for Brexit. UK Prime Minister Theresa May is expected to trigger Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty. And when she does, it's the beginning of the end of the formal relationship between the UK and the European Union. We've been living together. Both sides are expected to take about 2 years to negotiate the official terms of this divorce deal. Article 50 has never been triggered before, but it's expected it will take the form of a letter from the UK's permanent EU representative to the EU Council President Donald Tusk. Gillian Tett is managing editor of the Financial Times, and she's here with what to expect from the months of negotiation that are coming up. Gillian, welcome to The Takeaway.
Great to be on the show.
Well, divorce is a foreboding term. It's probably accurate here. What do the Brits want from their terms of this split?
Well, divorce certainly is a very ugly term, and however you look at the future right now, it does look like the negotiations are going to be pretty ugly, because the Brits started off hoping that they would be able to get a lot of market access without having to sacrifice very much. They wanted all the good bits of being in the European Union, i.e. freedom to trade as they wanted and have their financial services essentially operate across the European Union without having to accept some of the key pillars such as free movement of people or capital. Now, the problem is that as time has passed, it's got nastier and nastier. And essentially, the Europeans are saying that you can't have access to the market. You're going to have to basically agree to divorce and then start talking about a new treaty. They've slapped a bill on the British as well, about 60 billion euros or sterling, depending on how you calculate it. And there's going to be a lot of fighting, a lot of argument. My personal bet is, unfortunately, that probably they will end up leaving without a clear-cut deal in place, which means essentially they'll have to fall back onto the World Treaty Organization agreement.
Now, does Europe have something to lose here by taking a hard line? I mean, presumably having a tougher negotiation costs Europe money as well. And I wonder if this hard line, you know, you have to leave entirely, we'll negotiate later, you get no concessions, whether this isn't kind of just a negotiating posture.
Well, certainly everybody in the business community desperately hopes that what's going on right now is purely a bit of political shadow boxing, if you like. And the hope is that once the serious talk starts, that some element of compromise will be found. But sadly, as anybody who's ever been through a divorce knows, once you start flinging a lot of mud around, once you draw red lines, once you both get very angry and embittered, it's very hard to actually get people back to the table and be sensible and rational about this. The European Union does have things to lose in the sense that they have big trading relationships with the UK, but they also have things to lose because if the UK is seen to exit easily, that might encourage other members of the European Union to think that they needn't stay inside the European Union either. And there's a growing realization in both Paris and Berlin that they need to take a hard line towards the UK simply to keep the rest of the European Union together.
The vote that took place, Gillian Tett, over the summer in the UK was a very broad question. Stay or leave? Sort of a very digestible political question. Now we're getting down into the details. What does the political pressure from voters look like as you talk about the minutiae of trade, of financial services? Is the public really connected to this level of what Brexit means?
Surveys suggest that when people voted by a very narrow majority for Brexit, they were voting partly because they were fed up with the status quo. They wanted to give the establishment a kick in the teeth. In some cases, they were voting because they didn't like the idea of lots of East European immigrants coming in. But most people were not voting against the idea of a single market. They were not voting against the idea of having freedom to travel and to go and live in places like Spain or France. And the implications of a full Brexit are not particularly clearly understood at all. For the most part, the UK voters have been shielded from this in the last 6-9 months because actually the UK economy has performed pretty well, much better than most people expected. And there's been a sort of halo effect going on where people have thought, well, OK, so the doomsters told us that if we voted for Brexit, everything would fall apart. It hasn't happened, therefore it's going to be OK. Personally, I think that is an incredibly dangerous illusion. I think that when Brexit does start to bite, there's going to be much more in the way of economic shock. But for the moment, it seems that voters are not in a mood to call for a second vote and not really in a mood to rebel either, because there's a feeling that this is all very complex and technical. It's been fine so far. So why should anyone worry?
We're looking at a 2-year timeline here. Is there a chance within that 2 years that British voters turn around and say, oh, maybe we should reconcile. Let's keep it together.
So there's a lot of wishful thinking and a lot of speculation that actually there will be a second vote. The problem is that there are very few parliamentary or political mechanisms to make that second vote happen. And Parliament did stage a challenge of sorts. It demanded to have a vote, but it has now got through Parliament. There is a very logical reason to say that once the terms of a divorce are agreed, that divorce should be put back to the UK just to check, or the UK voters check, that that's what voters actually wanted. Because remember, when the whole issue of Brexit was first put on the table, UK voters were told that it wouldn't be a full-blown exclusion from the single market. I mean, they were told essentially nothing much would change. There would just be curbs on immigration. And what's happened in the last 6 months is that that vision has been stealthily changed over and over again. And we've gone from really a very mild version of Brexit that was on the table before to a very draconian version without much of a political vote.
Gillian Tett, U.S. Managing Editor for the Financial Times. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.